Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown. And welcome back to another edition of the Prospect Podcast. I'm Ethan Piotta, joined today by Alex Brown. Alex, how's it going today?
It's going well, dude. How about yourself?
Going well. I think this is our last episode. We pretty much, like we said, covered every positional archetype or kind of positional class, if you will, in the 2020 NBA draft class. Yeah, okay. at least the you know, not in-depth ones, just kind of overview, whether that was lead guards at first, to wings, to big guys, and now capping it off with what we call, it's almost a combo episode between off-ball guards and guys who will need to play in a secondary role in an NBA offense.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of secondaries in this class as far as secondary initiators that will need to play off the ball when they're not initiating. That's the point of them being secondaries. So we're going to evaluate them as well as kind of more of the pure off-guards in this episode.
Absolutely. So we're actually going to start off this episode with questions, because I texted you. I said I felt like we got a lot of good questions for this episode today, which we did, and almost could kind of set the framework for how we base some of these guys, as we're talking about them later on. So question number one that we got here from Evan Z at the City 2. Do you consider Tyrell Terry on or off ball primarily in terms of an NBA role? And he says it's one of the most interesting questions in the draft to him.
Well, I put out a question a while back, and I believe we discussed it on our guard or our big board episode, one of the two, regarding what makes the perfect non-initiator one. And based off the majority of the group's answers, I thought that Tyrell Terry best embodied that description. So I think at the NBA level, the best fit for Terry is as an off guard next to like a jumbo initiator, like a three, you know, like a Luka Doncic or, you know, a Giannis, I mean, at best, of course. Because I want him moving off the ball. I want him using his shooting gravity. And as he fills out, I think he could be a plus defender because he's still very much not physically matured. Yeah. And he has a long way to go there. But once he's there, I feel he could be a plus. So he's going to have some secondary initiation roles. But I think his value is going to be maximized as more of a shooter and secondary playmaker. That makes I think that's the best way I could define it.
At least, yeah, for me, maximizing Tyrell Terry's value comes with putting him off the ball. That's how I've always based him. It's never been a thing for me that I think he's going to be something that he's not. You know, maybe you let him space create a few times a game off a closeout or off the catch or whatever.
Pick and roll too.
Right, but you're using him off the ball for not only his shooting and spot up ability, but the gravity that he's going to attract in terms of spacing the floor. And I think that is where he'll be really, really valuable. Like you said, hasn't physically matured yet at all. I've been watching a lot of him in high school recently, and he does the classic skinny guy trick of, you know, and I think you and me both know it, of wearing the long sleeve so that it kind of covers it up, right? But it's actually interesting to me in high school too. He, as most of these guys do, right? You're going to be pretty much the best player on your high school team or one of the best in some cases before you go to college. But, you know, he handled a lot of duty as like a primary in that kind of role. So it was interesting to see him operate and work. And I thought he was pretty solid in that role in a way, but you know, he's not an above average playmaker. I think he's a passable playmaker and someone that can make the right read. But again, more successful off the ball, maximizing value. You put him off the ball and you let him operate and work like that.
Yeah. And you want him initiating only in a secondary role out of like pick and rolls or, you know, attacking closeouts, as you say. So I think that's definitely the best way you could maximize Terry's value.
Agreed. And the point about his defense too, I think he definitely fills out. I already, one of my, I guess like sticking stones with Terry is that I think he's a really, really intelligent off ball defender, like just really good in help defense. And it's something that doesn't get talked about enough because immediately people look at him, smaller guy. He's not going to be able to succeed defensively at the NBA level. Well, I mean, it's fine. There's schemes to mask, you know, his deficiencies on the ball at the point of attack. And you can put him in a place where he can be at least successful for the time being while his body grows and he matures. I pretty much just described why I have him valued as a lottery pick. And I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah, I'm right there right now.
So, definitely Terry off ball. Next one from Alex Caruso, MVP. Thanks for the question. Would you consider Riller as more effective in an off-ball role, and which teams would be the best fits for him?
You want to take it away on this one? I know.
So I'm extremely high on Grant Riller. I definitely think that he's going to need the ball to be successful. And what role that is, I don't know. I've kind of thought about him potentially being a really nice scoring punch off the bench for an NBA team. He's not someone that's going to be your, you know, primary guy in any starting lineup, obviously, but definitely someone who needs the ball to be to maximize his value as opposed to Terry. I think, you know, he can operate off the ball in terms of just, you know, having catch and shoot opportunities. It would be really nice to put him in a position where he's attacking closeouts or running secondary pick and roll, but in a primary off-the-bench on-ball role, he's going to maximize his value, not only as a scorer, but in the pick-and-roll. I want to put him in as many pick-and-rolls as I possibly can while he's on the court because I just think he's so decisive and extremely smart out of the high pick-and-roll that he often ran at College of Charleston. So, I think he's one of those guys that you can find success in either way, but – I would definitely lean towards on ball in terms of effectiveness.
Yeah, and he's also, as you mentioned, he's going to be the guy that you're going to want to have the ball in his hands almost as a primary off the bench. Somewhat similar to Mason Jones with, you know, kind of the same usage in my opinion, though their roles will differ a little bit. But I'm on the same page there. I think that if you want to have a guy like Riller provide notable NBA value, he needs the ball because he's not going to provide as much value defensively. I think he could be a good shooter off the ball, and you know I don't doubt his shot at all. But you got to maximize his value with his space creation by putting the ball in his hands.
Yeah, he's one of the best, if not the best, space creator in this class. So I think giving him the ball as many times as possible, you know, in obviously a moderate sample size, you know, he's not a heliocentric player by any means. But you know, giving him the ball in a smart sample size and kind of letting him you know, fully maximize his value, as you said, is going to be really important. As for teams that fit for Riller, I think he's one of those guys that's any team can kind of use a space creator, shot creator like him off the bench, or at least, you know, 90% of the teams, in my opinion, you know, can use a guy like Grant Riller because he's going to provide bench scoring at the very least, in my opinion. And that's straight out of year one. But he mentioned the Knicks. I like the Knicks for Riller. For some reason, as I think the Knicks have a late first round pick that would, he would fit really well in that team. You know, that is saying that they don't pick LaMelo or Killian or another point guard with their high overall pick, then scratch that. But if they go elsewhere with their, you know, top five pick, if they do the thing and they pick Obi Toppin,
God forbid,
then he's a nice fit for the Knicks at the end of the first round. But, and I was going to try not to say this, but it's just so perfect to me. If he went to the 76ers at 21, I mean, I'd just be so happy with that. Or 22, whatever it is, because the Sixers a few years now have needed bench scoring. And a guy like Riller who can come in, space the floor alongside Ben Simmons and open up opportunities and kind of, you know, you can even play Ben Simmons off the ball with him on the floor because he has that kind of space creation ability. I think that's just a match, you know, made in heaven in terms of late first round picks.
Yeah, I would put him on a team with a jumbo initiator. And if you're a team like Milwaukee or you know, the 76ers, I would definitely consider Riller as a guy that's going to be a scoring punch off the bench and potentially run your second unit. I think that's where his value will be maximized.
For sure. Next question here from Jonathan. Thanks for the question. Which 2020 draft prospect will have a major impact on your future evaluations if he underachieves in the NBA? And he said Tyrell Terry, which is a good one.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, you know, thanks for the question, John. Check out the scouting work with PBC. He does a good job.
Absolutely.
If I had to pick one guy that was – that if he succeeds will have a major impact on my evaluation process would be probably Obi Toppin or RJ Hampton. Yeah. Obi Toppin, because of my well noted concerns about his defense and, you know, the production over value argument, and is he actually providing that much impact? How is his efficient scoring gonna negate his defensive liabilities? Is there a scheme that can really mask him? You know, that will potentially play a role. And then RJ Hampton is about leveraging intangibles, you know, because he doesn't really have a pure fit. And, you know, it's one of the things I worry about with him moving forward, but he has the intangibles to be such a good player. And, you know, super mature, super athletic. It's like he has a great base to build upon. And I like investing in projects like that. So if he underachieves, that'll probably, maybe put less stock in that. Or if he overachieves, it'll, you know, reinforce my thinking. But those are probably the two guys that are really going to impact my evaluations.
Yeah, I would immediately, for some reason, for this question I thought Poku, but then I kind of dismayed it because I don't think whether Poku succeeds or not, I don't think it would have an impact in terms of my value. Obviously a little bit of an impact, but not so major. But there is a few guys in this class that I would really like to see, you know, what happens in terms of positive or negative for them when they get into the NBA. Number one is a guy that I've mentioned I'm going all in on because I think we talked about it for 10 minutes last show about how he has a really great base to build upon, and that's Patrick Williams. So, I mean, I think, you know, Patrick Williams is someone that if he does succeed, I'll obviously be really happy that my evaluation was correct in a way. But if he doesn't succeed, it's something that I'm going to learn from and hopefully, you know, the question marks on his, you know, versatility or whatever and biomechanics is something that will go into my future evaluation, and I maybe, you know, take a different way, I guess. Another guy that I just want to mention real quick is Anthony Edwards, because I just want to see how much of a measure defensively, you know, he really – how much of a negative really is he going to be at the NBA level? And I think he'd be a nice benchmark in a way to look for in future prospects, because there are guys like Anthony Edwards that come along and have the same to similar question marks.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And Anthony Edwards is definitely somebody I'd add to my list just because it's like, how will he impact winning? And can he be more than just a volume space creating shot maker from 3-point range? Because he has the base, but, you know, the rest of it is kind of a question mark for me. And
yeah.
And if he does find a way to succeed just based off of his awesome shot making and, you know, high end athleticism, it's going to be like definitely something I'm going to focus on. But my evaluation of success for him is he going to impact winning in multiple ways, you know, not just Because he didn't really impact winning as much as I'd like him to at Georgia. He really didn't do a ton comparatively to some of the other stars you see. So I think watching how his impact plays out is going to be huge, because right now he worries me. And so if those worries are justified in the next few years, then I'll definitely continue to note that in prospects about, are they going to provide value in other ways if they're not a winning engine?
Agreed. Yeah. And it could be fit dependent too. So you got to keep that in mind. And just like where he goes, like obviously that's with anyone, is that, they could have a different career track based off where they get drafted. But mm-hmm. I think with Edwards, like you mentioned, it's just a measure of, will he be an impactful player or not, to be honest? Like, will he provide a positive impact on any NBA basketball team?
Or positive enough impact.
Yeah, positive enough.
Especially, right. I'm there too.
Next question here from Off the Ball Podcast. It's my guy, Chris. Chris, thanks for the question. Which Duke player has the biggest upside in this draft? So I think we're looking at Trey Jones, Vernon Carey, and Cassius Stanley. And honestly, before we even answer this, I'd say Matthew Hurt. go ahead.
Matthew Hurt.
I think it's, for me at least, it's between Trey Jones, because I don't think he has that big of an upside in a way, but he has a safer ceiling than some others that we might discuss. But honestly, Cassius Stanley's up there too, because with his 3-and-D potential, he's one of those guys that does have both, the off-the-catch 3 to his game and athleticism defensively. That he can build upon, could be a pretty valuable NBA player one day if he kind of, all puts it together.
Yeah, I, as much as I like Trey Jones for his safe floor and safe ceiling, I think Cassius Stanley has the most upside, especially for an athlete of his caliber. If that shot and his defensive game keeps developing, I think he could be a very impactful player. But while Trey Jones is my favorite right now, Stanley has the highest ceiling. And I don't think it's particularly close with Vernon Carey.
I agree with you there.
Quite low on Carey. I think he's a role player at best.
I think because, again, a guy like Cassius Stanley too, even in, you go back to his high school days at Sierra Canyon and Harvard Westlake before that, he's a guy that had the ball in his hands a lot more than he did at Duke. I think it was it Derek that said that every three that Cassius Stanley made this year was off an assist, which
is something
pretty
like
interesting
that,
and kind of just shows to you that, what he's obviously catering to his role. But I'd agree that it would be Cassius Stanley, because I mean, the athleticism alone will open up many doors for him. In terms of what he can, do and provide value on a basketball court.
Yeah, and we'll dive a little deeper into him on, as we go through this podcast, because he's in our list of off guards. So I think he's going to play that 2 spot. So, yeah,
sure.
I like Stanley. He's growing on me.
Agree with you there. Next question here from Zach Smith. Thoughts on the chance that Miles Powell and Marcus Howard translate into successful off-ball players, and also is there a chance either becomes a plus defender?
I think Miles Powell is the only guy with potential to be a non-negative defensively, because he does have kind of a high motor defensively when he's engaged, and he can play off the catch pretty well. Marcus Howard, I'm not sure how much else he does. He's definitely not going to be a plus defensively. He could be a killer off the ball. I'm not sure because he's a guy that the ball's in his hands constantly. And while he does play really well off the ball, I don't know if he's going to succeed as an NBA off guard. Because he just doesn't provide value everywhere else, and in a lower usage role, I just don't always see it with Marcus Howard, even though I love his game.
Yeah, obviously fun to watch, but just again, I talked to you about this, but anytime a guard is undersized in a way and doesn't average, you know, 4 or 5 assists per game, which is kind of even like the baseline, it's worrisome to me. And so Howard, I think he could, yeah, like you said, could be extremely successful off the ball, just spacing the floor with his 3-point shooting alone and other things that he can do in that kind of realm. But I mean, I have both him and Powell listed as, obviously Howard a lot more than Powell, but listed as negative defenders. Powell's maybe a little bit more towards the middle. So I don't think either become plus defenders in my eyes, but if one was to become passable or at least average on that end, it'd be Miles Powell. Question from Simon here. Should I get a Jamias Ramsey college jersey or just wait till he gets drafted and get his NBA jersey? Well, I guess.
Skip. Yeah.
No, I like the – I would go with the Texas Tech. Texas Tech jerseys are nice. They're nice.
Yeah.
I was going to get a Culver one last year. I would go – because he could get drafted to, like, I don't know. The Grizzlies don't have – I mean, if you get in a Grizzlies throwback jersey, then, yeah. But the Grizzlies don't have amazing jerseys right now, so –
No, I'd go for a Tech jersey. Not even close.
And then last question here from Will Morris. Looking back on the 2012 NBA draft, when would you take Andre Drummond in a redraft? So I think we both pulled up the 2012 draft. And I think it was
– We'd take Anthony Davis, Bradley Beal, Damian Lillard. Who else? We got
Draymond
Green, Chris Middleton, those five guys for certain. Evan Fournier, I'd probably take over him as well. Maybe you could make an argument for Harrison Barnes if you really wanted to, but I'd probably take Andre at 7. Or
I think I'd take him at 6, right before Fournier. But it'd be close. I think Drummond's had he's had a really – solid NBA career, all things considered.
Very productive, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was an interesting draft class, this one.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. There was not a lot else in this class. But,
right.
Yeah, definitely in the range of our two opinions, I'd be fine with.
Now, opening into our off-ball kind of guard discussion, so, you know, we have two separate groups of guys that we're going to talk about. We got a lot to get through. And one group is kind of these off guards or twos, shooting guards in a way. And then the other group is kind of secondaries that can play either position, but will probably need to play off ball or in a secondary initiator role.
Indeed.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's how we've kind of divvied it up. But starting with the off guards, Isaiah Joe, Arkansas. I know you have some strong opinions on him. He's been a guy that's been moved up a lot recently by kind of just like, you know, people on Twitter and from what I've seen. So what are your thoughts on Isaiah Joe?
Well, before we start, I just wanted to note that we did define Okoro and Bain as wings, even though they could be in this discussion. But Isaiah Joe for me is one thing I'm a little hesitant on for Joe is while he obviously has a great shot, you know, he was on shooting 10 threes a game on like a 74% like 3-point attempt rate or 76% at about a 37-38% career clip, I guess. So he's undeniably a good shooter, a guy that's going to stretch the floor, has crazy range, can shoot from well beyond NBA 3-point line. But I really thought that he was definitely the second best player on Arkansas. And I'm not sure what else he provides to a team because I've seen flashes of defensive value, but I didn't think it was – it's going to be as valuable at the NBA level. I think he has a rather slight frame. He's probably only going to be able to check ones and twos. I don't think he's that versatile. I think he's going to, you know, get a steal here or there. And, you know, I'm just having trouble buying him as anything more than a shooter. I think that's kind of all that, he is. I know a lot of guys are trying to sell him 3 and D, or at least 3 and passable D. But I think he's just a shooter. And, you know, I'd gladly eat my words on that because I loved watching him play alongside Mason Jones. But, you know, he has a great shot. I just don't see much else there.
Anyone that hooks up 10 threes a game is fun. It's good basketball. It's not good basketball all the time, but it's fun basketball to watch. And so Isaiah Joe, you know, like you said, I have trouble finding, you know, for one, he's got to fill out. He's, like we mentioned, a slender frame. I think he's listed at 180, 175 some places. Mm-hmm. He's got to put on a little bit of weight because he's not a super explosive point guard type. Some people have also tried to sell his self-creation ability, and he had a few step backs or, you know, quick mm-hmm. 1-2 dribble, you know, common, I would say, just plays that he made at Arkansas. But I don't think that's going to be something that translates to the NBA level. But what you have with Isaiah Joe is, like you said, someone that is going to need to be sold as a 3-and-D guy to maximize his value. And if he does turn into a solid 3-and-D guy, it's a decent pick. But I mean, for a guy, you know, that did shoot 10 threes a game, I think an important point to note is, and we mentioned it, Mason Jones had such insane gravity at Arkansas that Joe got a lot of open shots. It wasn't often that Joe was, you know, creating a three pointer for himself or, you know, having forced to shoot this, you know, kind of otherworldly look, but he was getting pretty good looks for the majority of the season, and he didn't shoot a great percentage. It was 34%.
Yeah, 34 this year.
And so, you know, obviously there's indicators. Free throw percentage is about 90, pretty good touch. And he probably will become a good three-point shooter at the next level.
I think he will.
All signs point towards that. But what else is he going to do, you know, to maximize his value on an NBA roster in a way? That's how I feel, at least, because I don't really see him in any other role.
Yeah, it's like, what do you want? What is the value that he provides that you're going to put him on the floor to do? And the only thing that's at an NBA level is shooting. I think defense will be a negative or neutral at best, but that's kind of the only translatable skill he has. And, you know, I think that is going to translate. I think, again, as you said, all the indicators are positive, but there's just not much else there for me.
Yeah. Moving on to Cassius Stanley here. We kind of talked about him in the opening, but I'm actually – I don't know. I've risen a lot on Stanley. He's going to be a lot higher on my next board, if you will, that I put out. And I've noticed it. He's someone that I've literally been, like, constantly rising. I think it's because – he's one of those guys that's going to be overstated by the media, but shouldn't be understated by others in a way. If you know what I mean, like he's got a pretty safe floor in my opinion. The more and more I watch him, just in terms of his 3-point shooting offensively, he's going to provide value in that sense. And then defensively with his toolbox, you know, with his athletic prowess, like he has potential to be a really, really good defender at the NBA level. And that kind of turns him into a prime 3-and-D candidate from this class. He's definitely worth a second-round pick at the very least, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he's definitely an upside play. You know, he has some tools that guys like Joe do not. And while he's not as prolific a 3-point shooter, he's more of a low-volume guy. There's something to build upon there, and there's more to build upon defensively. And you get a guy that's such a great athlete, such a good vertical athlete as well. You know, there's some value there to build upon, and if he can really increase his ability to make plays defensively and just lock in more often, because there have been some good flashes. He's a base to build upon. You know, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to spend a lot of time in the G League initially, but he could end up being a valuable player just because he has that upside.
Yeah, agreed. For sure. And he's also, aside from having upside, he has one of the safer skill sets to build upon too.
just in terms of, you know, what he's coming in to do in the NBA.
Yeah.
He's obviously going to have to make strides, but it's not going to be, you know, something insurmountable. It's can he improve as a three-point shooter, add a little bit of self-creation to his game to make him, you know, more playable and magnetic on offense. And then defensively, just really using his athleticism. If you've seen that recent dunk that he had on his Twitter page where he went between his legs, that was one of the craziest dunks that I've seen. Like, I mean, this guy just absolutely jumps out the gym. And we've known that for a while with Cassius Stanley. But if he kind of all puts it together, this is someone that, you know, he could stick in the NBA with his skill set.
Yeah. I still think he's going to be a role player. But
oh, for sure.
You know, I think there's more to build upon there than some of these other off-guard players. And
yeah,
while he doesn't have an elite skill like Joe does with his shooting,
right?
I like the base there.
Right. So Jamias Ramsey is a super interesting guy, someone who's been at kind of the forefront of just like, you know, he's another guy that if he pans out, maybe your evaluation changes on someone like him. But I mean, I don't know. I think we're both on the lower side in terms of Jamias. Because he's again projected to be someone who is a good 3-point shooter with, like Stanley, defensive upside, another 3-and-D guy, prototypical, if you will. But defensively, he was more often than not kind of a lost cause at Texas Tech, I would say. Like, honestly, out of their five guys that they had, he was more often than not the weak link defensively. Like, and Texas Tech is a good team. But Jamias Ramsey, I wasn't impressed with him defensively at all this year. And the positives with him is that he's, you know, got great size, and that he could be a really solid shooter at the next level. But I mean, I have some doubts there too that I don't want to have. But you know, it's just, I'm just, for those reasons, I'm not all the way there on Jamias. He's someone that, again, fine if you use a late first round, early second round pick on. It's like, it's not the end of the world, but there's just something that's holding me back in terms of, you know, placing him higher, I guess.
Well, if I had to define it, one thing with Jamias, I mean, first of all, it does have a beautiful shot. At least this year, he really did. You know, he had a scorching start to the year. And while his free throw numbers were quite poor for his shooting, he definitely showed that he can stroke it from deep. Defensively, to elaborate on what Ethan said, I think off the ball, he was a negative, just to put it lightly. And he does have point of attack potential because he is, you know, kind of strong, compact, and a pretty good athlete. So he has value in point of attack, but it's not as valuable as having a good team defender. And I don't think he's so good on the ball that it negates his, you know, his lapses. And while, of course, guys can get better off the ball and, you know, your instincts can get better, your decision-making on defense, right now it's the signs of, I mean, how many guys go from poor decision-makers off the ball to good decision-makers? I would imagine it's very few. And while so many people say, oh, you know, they're young, you can teach instincts, you can, you know, teach that decision-making, I don't see poor decision-makers become good decision-makers very often.
And, or pluses in some cases.
Yeah, you know, they can be passable, but it's just like I don't see the crazy value that some other people are seeing with Jamias Ramsey. And, you know, point of attack and shooting, that's kind of all he brings. And that's just not enough for me to value him as high as some of these other guys. And
yeah.
I'm just, there's not enough there for me.
I mean, yeah, I think that's a good point, honestly. I was going to add that. I think, you know, he's got a good, again, he's got a decent base to build upon in terms of size, 3-point shooting, and, you know, potential defensively. But he's really got to make some strides, like, early on if he's going to be impactful, in my opinion. So I just
–
for that reason, I think there's other better value plays that, you know – because I think some people who have Ramsey a little bit higher are also buying the point guard upside to him. And like you said, the decision-making is not there, like,
he's
at all.
He's not a point guard. He's a two.
No, he's not, right. And I say that because I've seen him
yeah,
listed
yeah.
At point guards, but I absolutely, like, absolutely not. I'm totally on board with that.
He's not a point guard.
Right. And so I think there's other better value plays that you can get, and some of the guys that we're even going to talk about here, than what he is going to bring or what he's going to have to develop. And one of those guys, in my opinion, that I have higher than Jamias is Tyshawn Alexander. Who I think is definitely kind of similar, but I mean, a dog defensively, and a good enough 3-point shooter with good indicators in terms of volume. He was about 7 attempts per game, 86% free throw shooter. And someone that Josh Richardson in the NBA has been one of my favorite players for a while. I could honestly kind of see Tyshawn filling the same sort of role of, you know, assuming some
same
point guard abilities. Yeah, same, assuming some, you know, point guard minutes, but being a really good defender in that off guard role that can check ones, check twos, but also space the floor and just do, you know, a variance of things on the basketball court to affect winning. And he's someone that he's made such great strides since he came to Creighton.
Yeah. And I totally buy him off the ball. One thing that I really like looking at when evaluating these off-ball guys that may be secondaries or tertiary initiators, he had a super low turnover percentage. And he also had a high three-point attempt rate, but not off the charts high. It's not the only thing he could do. He could get to the line a lot better than some of these other guys like Jamias or That's one thing I like about Tyshawn, and he is kind of a similar, in some cases, to Jamias as far as a similar size, similar build. But do you think they have a similar build? They're about the same size, 6'4", 195 ish.
Yeah, I would say so.
But he's kind of a thinking man's Jamias Ramsey,
right?
Yeah, that's what I like about him more. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a shooter and have passable defense or potentially plus defense. And I like that about Jamal.
Good athlete. Really good athlete, too.
Yeah. He can handle the ball a bit. And
grabs the rebounds.
Like,
he's going to – with his – just the amount of things that he does well, it's going to open doors for him to be successful. This next guy here, also super interesting and kind of a riser since the season ended, but Trevilyn Queen. And I know you're working on a report for him right now, so I'm going to let you take it away on Trevilyn.
So Queen is a very interesting player. First of all, he has a great story. If you haven't read up on it, I would definitely do that. He has a work ethic worth buying. He's about 6'6", 190, 6'8", wingspan. For an off guard, which is fine, it's pretty average. He shoots the ball very well, in my opinion. That he has some kinks to work out, but he's one of those shooters where he doesn't need to adjust his feet at all when he's spot up on the perimeter.
Yes.
And so when I was going over his film, like, if you watch, he just catches it and it's going up. Like, there's no adjustment needed at all.
One motion.
So it can make him rather streaky. But he's going to be a guy that's going to draw a lot of gravity because he can get his shot off so easily. And he's a high-energy guy. He plays hard defensively. He just really needs to continue to develop his feel and his overall just decision-making and skill level. And that comes when you're a guy that kind of came out of the dirt, so to speak, as far as a guy that went from, I mean, read his story. He's not been at a high level program for 4 years. He's still raw as a decision maker, but I do buy him off the ball. I think he really provides value just running off screens, spot up guy, a guy that can catch and drive. And he was one of the more impactful players in the country in a low usage role last year. And
hey, he didn't start a game last year.
Role. Yeah, and he was like one of the highest in BPM for, you know, that archetype. And so definitely pay attention to Queen. He's a guy that has the drive and the potential skill set to make it as a backup guard.
Yeah. And like you said, just again, obviously great story on Queen. I've heard a number of things on just, you know, how he's gotten to the, you know, where he is and what, you know, he's still kind of, like you said, he's still kind of learning as a decision maker and as a basketball player in general. But someone that, I'll be honest, I need to watch a lot more of going into, you know, these next few months that we still have. He's someone that I've kind of put off for a while, but I know the essence of his game, and you pretty much hit it all in the head. I think, again, with Queen, it's about, you know, just shoring up some of the things that he doesn't do well. And especially the prime example is, like you mentioned, his shot. He's got some kinks. He's a one motion shooter, which I always cater towards guys who shoot off one motion, because I think it's just a more effective shot. But you know, he's got some kinks to work out, and he can become a better 3-point shooter than he is. But definitely providing value just as a two-way guy with creation upside will be his key, from what I've seen at least.
Yeah, he's also a great athlete, and he can get downhill. He just, again, he's one of those guys that you just need to get under control and, you know, have him learn the game a little further. And I think that's a project that may be worth buying into. I mean, he is going to be 23 or so on draft night, but you know, as a guy that you could get, you know, 25 on a rookie contract, you know, he could have some value as a role player. So definitely a guy to monitor moving forward. He's a guy that's still learning the game, but has a great skill set to build upon.
Next guy here from Utah State I think he would have made a lot of noise in the tournament, because it was Merrill that hit that game winner or like go ahead shot against San Diego State in the Mountain West Conference tournament.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Sam Merrill, awesome. He's an interesting guy, and I don't know what NBA role he'll exactly, you know, have, or if he will have one, but I for sure had a lot of fun watching him in college over his last 4 years. And you're getting a guy with, you know, I don't know. I've seen guys with Merrill's skill set in terms of just being obviously a shooter, but someone who also is just super crafty, gets to his spots, has some creation upside even. I don't know how much of it will translate to the NBA. Has a little, from what I watched, good playmaking instincts. Obviously his gravity and the usage that he had at Utah State opened up so much for his team. And I mean, obviously, in my opinion, he's going to be a really good shooter. But someone that you're probably looking at undrafted, obviously a prime summer league guy if we had summer league. but just there's not enough there other than the shooting for me to be fully in on him. I don't know how you feel about Merrill.
Yeah, I think he's going to be passable or a slight negative defensively. He's definitely not a playmaker on the defensive end.
Right.
He turns the ball over very let me rephrase that. He seldom turns the ball over. He really gets to his spots off movement well. He has value as a shooter, and that's kind of it, honestly. I think he's going to be a good decision maker, but as a 6'5 guard that can stroke it, you know, there's a chance for him. But he needs to refine some of his other skills to really hammer the nail home, so to speak.
Agreed. Another guy here, CJ Ellaby, someone I think we were going to mention on the wing episode, but kind of just fit him into this off guard, because honestly, he could play either. You really put him as a wing or as an off guard. But someone I've been watching a lot of recently, and he's got his downsides, but also just, I mean, someone that you look at and he's a pretty good round two candidate, honestly, because there's not a lot of guys that can space create like Ellaby. He's not an out of this world athlete or by any means, but he gets to his spots and he gets his shot off, and he's got good size and he was the engine on Washington State this year. Washington State obviously was not very good, but I always despise Ellaby for nailing Arizona State with a game winner in Wazoo this year. That was bad. But yeah, he's someone that I think you're getting someone that you got to buy the upside with his shooting and then a little bit of attacking closeouts, taking it off the dribble, being able to do some things in a limited sample or limited space that are positive. I don't have him marked as a positive defender. He was honestly hidden off the ball a lot this year at mm-hmm. Washington State too. They didn't really play him on any of the major guys that they went against. And Pac-12 doesn't have many major dudes that you're going against anyways. But yeah, I have him labeled as a negative on that front. But just, I'm interested to see. He's another guy that honestly, like my evaluation, I don't know what to do with him. I'd probably give him a chance just off of space creation alone. But yeah, it's interesting with his skill set to see what kind of value he could provide.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be on a two-way deal or a G League deal just because I think teams see the value in his kind of more of a high usage role. So I think it's going to be hard for him to turn into an off-ball guy and provide similar value because right. he, you know, relies on space creation and all that. So he's worrying in that sense, but, you know, he's going to be a project that teams are going to be investing in as a guy that's going to be in your G League system as a high usage guy and maybe developing off the ball there. But other than that, there's not much I see in Ellaby other than space creation, shooting equity, and that's all I got for Ellaby. I don't think he's going to be a major winner. Another guy I want to mention as an off guard is Jordan Ford, a guy that's not going to be asked to do any point guard duties. He is a pure shooter. You know, he's going to be a high volume, high efficiency three-point shooter that's going to provide value off movement and in limited pick and roll creation. He averaged 22 a game this year on 41% three-point shooting and good free throw numbers. And he just really needs to improve some of his other skills. You know, he's going to be probably a negative defensively, but he has legit shooting potential. And he's a guy that you could see go overseas or go to the G League. But he's one of he could put up high numbers in summer league or – yeah, he's going to have an interesting career path, kind of similar to maybe Marcus Howard or even potentially Miles Powell as far as guys that are non-initiator like ones.
Yeah.
But he is a prolific shooter, and he was really fun to watch. So I think his best landing is in the G League or overseas, but still some interesting stuff there.
Yeah, obviously – thing with Ford is, and I think some NBA team would have drafted him if college basketball rolled around, honestly, like just because he would have showed out in March. He would have been one of those guys that benefited off March Madness and could have taken St. Mary's to a stage where he was just amazing, even in that West Coast Conference tournament when he's playing against Gonzaga a couple times. And I mean, super interesting, and like we talked about him back on episode 2, but a guy who played 38 minutes per game and turned the ball over one and a half times per Very game as cute. Well. It's just that's just it's beautiful, and he's gonna have to be an off ball guy. He can't have the ball in his hands as much as he did, obviously at St. Mary's, which is going to limit his potential, limit his value because he's a negative defensively. So, I mean, I think he's someone that's just going to be a star overseas, though, potentially.
Agreed.
With his skill set and his shot creation. I obviously just was really fun to watch at St. Mary's over his 4 years there as well. So,
yeah, definitely an overseas guy, in my opinion. But could spend some time in the G League. Moving on to Emmanuel Quickley, guy that's going to be a pure off guard. I don't really think he has a lot of creation equity, but 42% from deep and 92% from the free throw line. He was one of the guys that really had a breakout year. Went from 5 to 16 points a game. Definitely developed a lot of fans due to his relentless shooting from deep and just his overall, I guess he had some swag to his game as well. I honestly don't see a lot in Emmanuel Quickly other than shooting. That's kind of all I see. He doesn't jump off the page anywhere else. He's not a – I don't think he's going to be a plus defender. No. I think all he can do is shoot the three. He's a shooter. And I don't think there's enough other – you know, that's kind of a common theme. There's not enough all-around skills to really have him fit or stick, rather. But definitely a high-level shooter. That's kind of all he really has going for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, it just you saw him – like, there's not going to be a drastic change in his role from Kentucky to the NBA. Like, we saw him in his NBA yeah. role at Kentucky, and he did a little bit more than he would do in the NBA as well. He's someone – I think he's going to get drafted in the second round just because yeah, – I don't know. It's just he's, because he's from Kentucky and he shot good three-point percentage, but he's not in my top 60. He does have an elite shooting skill. I'll put it at that. Like, I think he's going to be a good shooter. But, again, Emmanuel Quickly, he's someone I've been following for a while, even since, like, high school, because he was a super highly ranked prospect coming into Kentucky. And he was a different creator.
Was he a Jelly Fam guy, too?
He might have been, yeah. He was a different level of creator in high school. And, obviously, there was higher expectations than late second-round draft pick for Emmanuel Quickly coming out. But, you know, if you're drafting him – you're getting shooting, and like you said, that's about it. There's not a lot else that I'm banking on him being proficient with and playable with, because he's just a three guy. He's not a three and D guy. He's not going to provide defensive upside or anything of that sort.
He's just a shooter. And speaking of just shooters, what do you think about John Petty as an off guard?
I really like John Petty, but I have him ranked even lower than Quickly because he's I mean, I don't know. He's interesting. He shows flashes of, you know, making the right read, but nothing out of this world. And obviously, he's a great shooter. He benefited from Lewis and just the amount of shots he got
Sexton
this year.
Before that.
Right. He benefited from that. And he's pretty good defensively, but not as proficient as I'd like on that end.
He's okay. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be a plus defender, honestly. But,
good size, though. Good size, and he rebounds the ball pretty well. I mean, I don't know. Again, it's someone that I've cooled on a little bit because, like Quickly, like the rest of these guys, honestly.
All he can do is shoot.
Shooting, and you don't really see anything else. And those kind of guys are – you have to be really elite. Like, you have to be Aaron Nesmith level to be, you know, talked about in a different different crop, if you will. So
yeah, but – I think that's an interesting theme you're seeing about all these guys that the only NBA value they're going to have is shooting, or at least the only plus value they could have. Is that enough to keep them in the NBA? And I think in a lot of the cases, it's going to be a no. So definitely monitor that moving forward with all these guys we've mentioned as just shooters, because they're not 3-and-D guys. They're shooters. That's all they are.
Yes.
And at least that's all they have is NBA value. And so I think that rounds out the majority of just our regular pure off guards. Now I want to talk about some of the guys that are going to be more of secondary initiators that will need to play off the ball to maximize their value. And I think the biggest example of that is Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is a guy that you saw him have the ball in his hand almost, most of the time at Georgia at a 30% usage rate with relatively low impact analytically. Very like 2.2 net rating, which is pretty bad. High turnovers, I mean 1-to-1 turnover ratio, or assist turnover ratio rather. And elite shot making, but poor percentages. And how do you leverage that against, alongside his defensive concerns? Like, what other value is he going to provide if he can't play off the ball?
He has to. Yeah, he has to be. And the thing about Edwards is like he has potential. Like, I think he's a really good cutter. Like he's an excellent cutter. He's excellent when he's going towards the rim. Good things happen for Anthony Edwards. And the problem is we've talked about it. He just didn't do it. Just settled. Didn't pay attention defensively, and this is why we have these concerns with him. And he's someone that he's going to get drafted. He could honestly, I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if he's drafted number one on draft night. Like I would not bat an eye. But Anthony Edwards is going to have to, like you said. I'm still hoping he goes to Golden State, to be honest. Like, that's the best fit for him, is in a place where he can learn to be effective without the ball. And obviously, that's the dream scenario for a lot of guys. But with Edwards, I mean, like you said, he's going to have to be valuable without the ball in his hands. There's no way he can have the ball in his hands as much as he did at Georgia on an NBA team. Because that's going to be the worst team in the NBA.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying with Edwards is if you have him as your engine or your primary, your primary scorer, there's just not enough. Yeah, you're going to be a losing team. And that's the real issue with Edwards, and I think people keep seeing this upside with, you know, his shooting and his shot making. But he didn't do it it looked great. Eye test looked awesome, but the numbers were not there at all. And his low impact for such a high usage is extremely worrying if you're looking at a guy that you want to run your offense, or at least be a focal point in. And I think the key for Edwards to really stick is either to do this off the bench, which is not worth a number, you know, a top 10 pick, or really learn to play off the ball. And I think that's his only way that he's going to really be worth this.
Maximize his value.
Yeah. But guys with him at number one, I just don't see it. I don't see him as a guy that's going to drive winning, especially if he doesn't play off the ball. So
exactly.
He is the biggest example of a guy that's going to need to learn to do that, because – there's no way he's going to be a winner without it.
I agree. And he's not going to be a winning player, not going to have a winning impact if he can't play off the ball. Obviously, just great tools. He's a great athlete. And we're not – I think, you know, just to clear things up, he's still 19 years old. And the thing that some people are buying, with Edwards is just the upside. But, like, there's been nothing defensively. There's been nothing, you know – elsewhere that really points towards like potential improvement or growth. Like I don't know what to base, like what do I go off defensively with him other than he was like not disengaged, and like maybe he's a decent point of attack guy, but is he ever going to be extremely proficient? Like I have to make some strides in that capacity, and I don't know, he's not just as safe as some people think, if you will. He's going to be, like you said, he's going to have to be someone that develops. Best case scenario is that he goes to a team somehow. He slips a little bit. It goes to a team that doesn't put him in the primary role right away. Because maybe one day he does, you know, improve as a shooter enough, improve defensively and as a decision maker and as a passer, and he realizes that going to the rim
that's a lot of things,
right? He realizes that going to the rim is positive for him, that he does become a really decent offensive engine in a way. But I mean, like you said, it's a lot of things that he's gonna have to improve on.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't
almost
know.
Overhaul,
right? Yeah. And I'm not taking a guy like that with the first overall pick. That's just
me. Same here. He's very concerning. And a guy that's in a similar but a very different archetype is one guy I'm very high on, and that's Mason Jones. Now, Mason Jones is kind of similar in the sense that he's a kind of a ball dominant two that is a space creator and tough shot maker. He is not a superb athlete like Anthony Edwards is. He is quite older than Anthony Edwards is. He'll be 22 on draft night. But he has a lot more bankable skills And that's kind of been my hot take moving forward with Jones, because he can, first of all, get to the free throw line at an unprecedented rate. One of the highest free throw rates of any guard. I think the highest. You know, he got to line, what, he had a 67% free throw rate, which is almost like a big, I mean, it's unreal for a guard. And if defensive concerns are out of the question for Anthony Edwards, you just love his offense that much, you should love Mason Jones even more. Because Jones, first of all, he was a positive defensively. He's a guy you want to mask off the ball, definitely. But not as disengaged, he's just more limited athletically, which could change because he is on the rise as an athlete. And if you follow his story, you'll kind of know why. But I really like Mason Jones' game. You know, 22 points a game, 5 rebounds, 3 assists on, you know, 35% shooting from deep with a high degree of difficulty, almost as high a degree of difficulty as Anthony Edwards. But he was able to pick his shots a little bit better, which isn't saying a lot comparatively, because Edwards was not good at picking his shots. But, you know, he's in that same mold as a guy that's going to be a volume space creator from deep. But he has more offensive skills he can bank on, like getting to the line and finishing around the rim, which he was elite at despite not being a high-level athlete. So, yeah, I think there's a route for Mason Jones to become one of the better players in this class, or at least one of the better guards. But I'd want him as my volume six man right now. He could be better than that. There is a legit path for him. But I'd love to hear your thoughts, because I've been high on him for quite a while.
Yes. Obviously it's a hot take, but it's a justifiable one. It makes sense, you know, what you're saying in terms of just bankable skills. And obviously this goes without saying, but the key difference is athleticism between the two of these guys. And we're not comparing, I don't think, that Anthony and Mason, I'm not at least, but like, you know, I think you're right in terms of Mason Jones has a lot more that you can bank on off the bat. And the difference is really just upside and obviously a couple other things. So we'll see. It's something I want to look back on and maybe even just spotlighting these two guys to see how their careers pan out. Because it could tell a lot just about the evaluation process and, you know, why is Mason Jones not listed on some draft boards and Anthony Edwards is one, like what's, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So definitely an interesting point. This is another guy I think we differ on a lot, but Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky. And the concerns with Maxey is that he's undersized and he didn't shoot a great percentage in college. But my personal belief is he's someone that does have a lot of those bankable skills like you talked about with Jones. I think he's a tremendous perimeter defender. He was good off the ball as well. Good space creator.
Great getting to the rim.
Yep, really. I mean, just one of the best finishing packages in this class. He's an acrobat in terms of shifting the ball and playing around the rim. And I've mentioned it, but I think he's going to become a proficient shooter at the next level with his indicators as well. So I'm a little bit higher on Maxey, and obviously you have your concerns. So again, just where are you lower on Tyrese?
Well, I am rising a little bit, just having a little more faith in some of those skills, as you mentioned, you know, getting to the rim and, you know, his plus defense. Because I think he is going to be a guy that's going to be able to check opposing ones and some twos. But the thing with Maxey is more – it's not that I don't like him. It's because he's one of the harder evaluations for me this year. He has a lot of great bankable skills, as you mentioned, and he has good, like, pretty solid intangibles as well. I'm a little concerned with what his role is going to be offensively. Like, I really can't put him into a category right now. And I think once I get more comfortable doing that, he's going to rise, you know, for me. But I see him more as an off guard now that with secondary playmaking. And until his shooting becomes like, unless it really, really develops, you know, and, you know, along with his, you know, he'll have value as on the defensive end. I think he's going to be a guy that's literally going to be, you know, 3-and-D and then like 3-and-D and secondary playmaking. And that's valuable, but I just think he has a longer road than maybe some of the other guys. But I'm just reluctantly low on him right now due to just ambiguity or whatever. Because I'm not very sure with what I'm going to do with Banksy. He's one of my harder evals.
Right. He's definitely an interesting evaluation, someone to look back on as well, because – like you mentioned, there's no clear-cut role for him that he's going right into in the NBA. Like, he's going to have to progress and develop in certain areas to be able to kind of, you know, maximize, you know, what he can bring to the table. And I think you mentioned it, secondary playmaker. I think he's got a lot of creation upside, obviously. His best bet is kind of playing alongside another star, another, you know, major initiator. But the problem is that he's probably not going to fall. I mean, I don't know, to be honest, because he's been on mock drafts where he's
seen him all over
second round. Yeah. So I think, you know, best case scenario is that he does fall and he goes to a team like LA or Philly or Milwaukee or somewhere. And that's just, I mean, that's awesome value with Tyrese Maxey at that point.
The role I've been seeing too, sorry to interrupt, but
go ahead.
Is, you know, when I watched him, I saw a lot of the same things I saw with Kobe White, which may be a bit of a hot take, but, you know, they do both get to the rim really well. They both have great finishing package and, you know, a projectable shot in some cases. But I thought White did almost everything better than Maxey. And, you know, so I was just like, you know, if Kobe is where he is now, and, right, you know, he still, of course, has a ton of upside because he's young. Yeah, where is Maxey going to be? And
right.
I'm still struggling to figure out where I want Tyrese Maxey, but there is value there. I just I don't see it as much as some other guys with him in the top 10 and top 4 and as some stuff I've seen.
I can't get into top 4, top 5 with Maxey, but like where I have him, I think I'm going to keep him around 8, 9, 10 because – I think his upside and what he brings to the table will obviously I think he'll develop into a solid NBA player just based off what he's projected to become, if that makes sense. So
what do you want to put him on the court to do in your eyes?
I want to put him on the court to be a secondary initiator, and that's why I don't want him to go to a team that needs some kind of primary in a way. I want him to be able to shoot off the catch. I want him to be able to space the floor, and I want him to be able to guard opposing ones defensively. And I think if the shot does come along, like I project it to come along, I think that he checks all those boxes. And honestly, that makes him pretty valuable, in my opinion.
Yeah. And adding on to that, you know, the ability to break down defenses with his handle and his driving ability. So, you know, there is value there. I'm still working on, you know, again, figuring out where I want that value, but there's something there. And if we can move on to Tyrese Haliburton, a guy that also has been rather polarizing for some reason.
Yes.
I see a lot of guys, and, you know, I even thought about this initially as like thinking of him as more of a primary, but he really isn't. He's an off-guard ball manager or game manager, and that's a really interesting archetype. And, you know, he's a guy that's going to be a plus on both ends in a low usage role. He had a 20% usage this year and still just impacted the game at a crazy high level. High assist rate for a guy that can't break down defenses really in any other setting other than pick and roll. I totally, totally buy his shot, which I think is kind of funny.
Yes.
But it works, and he impacts the game, makes so many winning plays. I think the only way he's gonna fail is if he's gonna be a lead initiator. I think the best way for him to play is as a spot up guy and you know, a glue guy that's gonna make constantly gonna make winning plays, and you know, the only time he'll break down defense is on probably pick and roll and all that, which is fine. But he has clear concerns with burst and handle, both of which can be improved, but probably will never be a major plus.
Yeah, you mentioned it. My biggest fear with Halliburton, you hit literally everything on the head in terms of his game. He's a great linking piece. He's someone that you want on an NBA team. You want his skill set and what his role is. My biggest fear is that he goes to like the Knicks at like 6 or 5. that's just a recipe for absolute disaster. But the best fit for a guy like Halliburton, aside from all the contenders that he would just obviously thrive on, is Warriors. Like Sacramento, Warriors. I mean, I think Sacramento is just it's a great potential landing spot, playing alongside someone like De'Aaron Fox and some of the other guys, the space creators that they have there, would really help what he brings to the table and kind of magnify his role. Because I think Halliburton is going to be a really valuable NBA player, and it's just all about being in the right setting and being, you know, around the right team. Because if he's, like you said, having to be a lead guy, it's not gonna go well. You're not gonna get what you're hoping to get. He's not space creator. He's not gonna create his own shot, you know, enough to be proficient in that sense. So there's a lot of landing spots for a guy like him out there, and just hope that a team is not setting him up for failure by drafting him to be their top guy.
Agreed. And I think it's also not fair for people to devalue him just because he's not going to be the guy that's constantly breaking down defenses. If you're valuing him as a primary, I think you're valuing him wrong. If you value him as an off guard that's going to be able to break down defense in pick and roll and with his passing and, you know, be able to pick teams apart, he has legit, you know, top 10, at the very least, top 10 value. And don't sleep on Tyrese Halliburton.
That's a great point. Just because he's not a primary guy or someone with that kind of upside doesn't mean that he's going to be a failure at the NBA level. Like, there's plenty of value for a guy like him. So
definitely.
Next one that we mentioned, and honestly, we kind of already talked about him, so let's just gloss over him, but Tyrell Terry, absolutely someone that should be used at the off-ball role. We mentioned it in the opening with that question. But Tyrell Terry, a guy that just shot tremendous percentage this year at Stanford and was a great shot maker and broke out onto the scene, but is going to have to be used in that off-ball role. And I think he's going to be used in that off-ball role, and he's going to be successful. Yeah. So that's all I really have to say about Terry, because we kind of addressed him earlier.
Definitely. Definitely. So let's move on to who would you like? RJ Hampton?
Yeah.
We can talk about RJ. So RJ is, again, I kind of mentioned earlier, he has awesome intangibles, but a questionable fit. And I think while the jump shot is viable and while his work ethic is viable enough to project that as a plus, or at least average, and alongside his pretty awesome athleticism, he's going to struggle if he cannot play off the balls. And he's not a guy I've watched as much as, you know, some of these other guys in this list, but I think there's a lot to like in his potential as a secondary, but I think he is very much a project. I'd love to hear your thoughts, though.
He's like Maxi, but in terms of, I don't know what role he's going to fit, but like on a little bit of a lower level in terms of like where I project him to be as a 3-point shooter. Like the biggest thing with RJ Hampton from what I've watched is like you mentioned, great intangibles, great athlete, super speed, can blow by guys. Yeah, right. He gets to the rim really well, in my opinion. And I think he has some defensive upside as well. Like, I think, you know, if he all puts it together on that end, he could be a really good point of attack guy. But the biggest thing that I've always said with RJ Hampton is literally just making guys respect him enough to where they go over the screen, because I think that will open up so much more for his game. Everyone went under in the NBL this year on RJ. And it made things tough for him at times. And so I think if he's just able to open up his shot enough that it makes guys literally just take one step over the screen and not literally sag off and go under like they're guarding Ben Simmons sometimes, it will it's going to open up his game so much more. And we could see flashes of him as a playmaker and getting to the rim and taking on centers one-on-one. And that's really what you want to see with Hampton. He's someone he's one of the few guys I don't know what to do with yet, because I still feel like I'm valuing him too low to have him around like 18 or 17. I think he should be higher than that.
I think he's one of the boom or bust guys, honestly. And it really, you know, it depends on how much his jumper can really open his game. Because if you get guys going up, you know, not having to go under screens on him, you know, he's going to be able to break down defenses that much more often and get to his awesome athletic tools, his, you know, occasionally decisive reads and playmaking, you know, his bounce and his, there's a lot to like there. It's just, it's a question of, is he going to put it all together? And, you know, that's a reasonable question to ask. And I think he's the type of kid you could bet on, but you know, there's reasonable doubt there, and a reasonable concern, I guess, would be the right word. So very interesting boom or bust guy, in my opinion.
This next guy, one of my favorite second round potential dudes, and he's so fun to watch. LSU was really fun to watch this year in general, but Skylar Mays, he just kind of has that craft. He's not an insane athlete by any measure, but he has the best pump fake in the draft. And he makes when he plays on a basketball court, really good defender from what I've seen. He makes flashes. He has flashes where he's going to the rim, and you don't expect him to be able to pull off like a double clutch reverse layup, but he somehow like does it, even though he's not that kind of athlete whatsoever.
Yeah, he's kind of sneaky.
Yeah, he's a really sneaky athlete. And I think he's just, I don't want to see this guy go undrafted. I'm scared, because he's a dream fit for anyone in the second round. Like, he's a situation proof guy that you can plug in and you're going to get value out of him as a 3-point shooter, as a defender, and in a few other areas, honestly, just impacting winning, whether that's grabbing a rebound or two or getting a steal or two defensively and stretching the defense, attacking closeouts, whatever it is. I think Skylar Mays is a pretty safe bet in terms of, you know, his floor.
Yeah, he was always a guy that popped for me when I was watching LSU, even, you know, the last couple of years. He just seemed like a, you know, first of all, great character, high intangible guy that's going to work. Be, you know, consummate pro. I like his, you know, his off guard potential. I think there's a lot to use there. You know, he's not one dimensional. He can initiate. He can shoot the ball quite well. He can get downhill. You know, he can get to the free throw line at a higher rate than some of these other guys we've mentioned. Not nearly as high as a guy like Mason Jones, of course, but still a rather high rate. And just a guy that really impacts winning. He's just solid and plays his game, knows his role. And, you know, there's a lot to like there with Skylar Mays.
This next guy, or second to last person here, Jace Scrubb, the number one JUCO player in the nation, bypassed his commitment from Louisville to stay in the NBA draft. And he's a really, really interesting guy and someone that I'm honestly, he's like Hampton, kind of in this, honestly, like a similar archetype and like positional role as Hampton too, that I'm interested to, you know, see what I end up like, where I end up putting him. I have him 45 right now, I believe, but Scrubb, he's a shot maker. He's an athlete. He doesn't shoot extremely well in terms of percentages, but you know, he creates his own shot extremely well. And he can get to the rim at will from what I've seen. I haven't watched, you know, extreme amounts of his junior college film, obviously. But from what I've seen, someone, again, who could put it together defensively but isn't there as a defender. I don't think he will be there as an NBA defender. But, you know, I wouldn't be mad if he's signed to like a two-way deal or plays in the G League for a while and kind of fills out, you know, not only in terms of his size, because I think he still needs to fill out his body a little bit, but as a player. And then you could potentially see an NBA future with a guy like Scrubb. But I think just, again, the biggest thing with him is pretty remarkable upside for, you know, where he could be drafted.
Yeah, I'm not really sold on that upside yet. I think he's more of an idea than an actual product, but – The thing about Jay Scrub for me, I just see him more of a G League guy. I think he's really just benefiting a lot from the the uncertainty of this whole process and this year in general. And while I think it is probably a good decision to capitalize it for him, I would have loved to see him in a D1 program. I think that's, I'm not sold at all yet. I think he's going to be a guy that's just going to stick in the G League for a while until he really has some more time to figure that out. But he's a G League guy for me.
Yep. And our last guy here, I this is one of my favorite international prospects, and honestly, from all the games that I've watched, I've heard his name pronounced like 8 different ways. But Yorgos Kalizakis from Greece. I think this is, if I'm not wrong, this is one of his last years that he's like available to enter into the draft. He's done it in the past. But again, you're looking at a dude he's 21 years old, which is obviously what puts me lower on him than some other international guys, but he'll probably move into my top 35. 6'7", 205 pounds is what he's listed at, and I believe it. He's got really nice frame. 3-level player, can get it done. He's never averaged over 3 assists per game in club play. I think he averaged over 4 one time in international, like U20 play, but the numbers don't do it justice. He uses his gravity to become a really solid distributor, and he makes a couple reads that honestly like made me stand up a little bit in my when I was watching him on my monitor. I was like, wow, I didn't even see that one coming. Just in terms of being anticipatory and hitting like a guy that's cutting baseline or something. I think the biggest thing with Kalizakis is that he's got to become a much better defender. He doesn't get into a stance at all defensively. And it hurts him. And being 6'7", 205, and having the footwork, he's not an insane burst guy, but he checks all the other boxes in terms of, being able to change pace and decelerate. And his footwork around the rim is immaculate. And if he can put that together defensively, then I could see, a lot more value with him right away at the NBA level, but he's going to have to really work on that. The 3-point numbers for him are
pretty bad.
Positive. I mean, they're positive in terms of indicators though, because he's just taken such a large amount of volume. But yes, in terms of percentage, they are not good whatsoever. And there needs to be obviously mechanical strides in terms of he needs to have a much higher release point for a 6'7" guy. And he does a little bit of like a Lonzo lower body twist.
Yeah,
it's more two motion than one. He brings the ball across his face too. But someone that's I think just really interesting in terms of what he could become if he puts together those two sides of his game. He's definitely fits the mold of like this secondary off the bench guy even, based off his creation kind of equity alone.
Yeah, without a really strong shooting or defensive package, I'd struggle to buy him moving forward, especially as a guy that's going to have to be an off guard at times. Because if you can't defend or really shoot the ball at a high level, I mean, you don't really have a lot of value off the ball. But for that reason, I think he's more of a guy that I would want to stash overseas if I did select him. Which I'm not sure I would. I would stash him overseas and make, watch that defense and shooting develop and monitor that. And, if it develops, it develops. And if not, then I just wouldn't bring him over. But, if that's a risk you're willing to take, then, to his own.
So be it. Right.
Yeah. But it's not a risk I would take. But he does have some interesting skills, especially being that size and having
the handle that he does.
And footwork and all that. But definitely still has a lot to put together if he really wants to have a chance at the NBA.
And the downside is that he's already 21, so
yeah, which is also a problem.
And if you're bringing him over, like, it's got to be soon. So it can't be like a Dario Saric like 5-year deal like kind of thing. It's like you got to bring him over right away or in the coming year or so. But that honestly wraps it up for our off-ball guard, secondary guard episode. I think we finally covered every single positional archetype on the, at least from the outline of things, in the 2020 NBA draft class.
Yeah, and you know, if you made it this far, and you know, you think we missed anybody, feel free to reach out, and you know, we'll give you our thoughts. And if we missed any archetypes, also reach out, let us know it.
Please.
Yeah, you know, some guys we didn't cover, like Dosunmu and all that, because I expect them to return. So yeah, that's I think that's about all we got. Thanks again for your questions and for tuning in, and yeah, we appreciate it.
Absolutely. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. Really appreciate it. Leave a like, whatever you need to do. Make sure you're following us at Prospect Pod on Twitter. Follow us on any Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever platform you listen to us on. We're pretty much everywhere now. But we're going to, I think, in the next coming weeks, start to bring guests upon the show and kind of just even expand our draft talk and just the evaluation process and a number of different things. So looking forward to that, now that we've kind of established in a way where we are on roughly almost every single, I feel like we've gone over probably 100 plus players in the last, or about 100 players in the last few episodes. So
it's been a lot, especially with the big board and all that.
Oh yeah.
Sleepers. So yeah, I mean, there's, of course, there will always be guys we didn't cover, but we got a lot for now.
Absolutely. Follow me on Twitter at Ethan Piotta. Follow Alex on Twitter at AHB Analytics. Stay tuned for that report he has coming out on Trevelyan Queen as well. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Thanks so much for the support. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you, guys.